Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer recruiting experts. Now, here's your host, Chris Cousins.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast. My name is Chris Cousins, and I am the founder of Sports Recruiting USA. Just want to say a big welcome to anyone who's listening. If you're a new listener or you're a returning listener, the support is really appreciated. We're going on now. We've just gone over a year doing these podcasts. The reception has been a lot better than I thought, actually. We've had some good guests on, some really informative and knowledgeable guests, and kind of useful guests as well for people to listen to. And once again, it's the same. We've got Brad Williams. He's today's guest. And Brad is actually a colleague of mine at Sports Recruiting USA. He has got a lot of experience in a wide variety of stuff, but the story kind of tells you about is the gap year situation that it took between high school and college. I won't tell you too much about that, but what he did for a couple of years, what he learned from that, is a top guy, very knowledgeable. And for players, for parents, for coaches, anyone listening to this, really, it's going to be you're going to take some knowledge from it, some gold. I won't tell you too much about it, but it's definitely worth a listen. So yeah, moving on. Just a little plug. We've got our SIUSA College Soccer Prep Camp that's happening in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, 21st, 22nd November, 2020. It's nicely ramped up. We've got everything in place. We're excited for it as staff. The camp itself is for players and teams to come along and kind of be a client for a weekend, really. And you're going to walk away with all the video you need, all the knowledge you need, everything possible to kind of get yourself recruited. A lot of these ID camps are just simply, you turn up, if a coach sees you, brilliant. If not, I wouldn't say wasted money, but you've kind of spent a day of your time not really getting anything out of it for the most part. So we've tried to look at the models everyone does and tried to add our extra sprinkle on it. So we brought in VO for the filming, which I think the filming is a really important part of recruiting, especially this year where coaches can't get out to recruit in person, and a lot of people are not able to get games. So we've opened up our event. It's open to high school players, like I say, teams, but also as well, which I didn't mention, college players looking to transfer, junior college players who haven't played any games, who are looking to transfer after the sophomore year, some even freshman year. But yeah, if anyone's interested, it's for males and females. All you've got to do is go to SIUSACamp.com. That's SIUSACamp.com. All the information is there on how to apply to attend. And one of the team will get back to you if you do apply. So if you can pass it on to anyone, that'd be awesome. So that's enough of the plugs, but I'll get straight into the show. So this is Don Williams interviewing Brad Williams. And this is the Inside College Soccer Podcast. Take care, guys.
So today with me, we brought in Brad Williams as a guest. And Brad, why don't you just introduce yourself in a quick background, and then we'll get into talking about what a gap year can do for a player if that's the right choice for them.
Sure. Yeah. So I started as a youth player in Northern California, particularly in the Bay Area, and from there, I actually went on to England, played for 2 years for a club called Team Bath Football Club. And I had a trial with FC Cologne in Germany that at the time was in the Bundesliga. And I then came back from England after 2 years and played 4 years of NCAA Division I with St. Francis University in Pennsylvania. And when I got done there, had a little bit of playing options, had a few playing options, but mostly I knew my path was in coaching. And that's what I've been doing since. I've been involved in the college game at the NCAA Division I, Division II, and junior college levels over the last 12, 13 years.
Hey, Brad, I'm going to take everybody back in time. When was the first time that you recall thinking that you wanted to go play in England?
I was probably about 10 years old, because I think the World Cup had just happened in America. And I would watch as much soccer as possible. I would watch highlights and things like that that would come on the television. Usually there were video recorded from what I remember, because there wasn't a whole lot of live soccer on the television then. It was all 1 and 2 in the morning recordings, and I would stay up the next day and just watch as much as possible. But it was mostly from the Premier League. And I remember memorizing teams and players and lineups, formations, things like that at a really early age. I was just fascinated with everything English football. And I think a lot of it had to do with the passion of the English game, the nonstop singing, the passion on the pitch, the commitment that the players showed, all of that just really amazed me. So I think that was the first time that I can really remember where I said, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to go over to England or abroad and try and play. And a friend actually pointed out to me a few years ago, our seventh grade yearbook had a quote from me. What I wanted to do when I grew up was to play soccer in England. So I was pretty young, 10, 11, 12, and had this idea. And that was right around the time of the birth of the MLS as well. And I think that had a major influence, because a lot of former Premier League players were coming to play in the MLS, and along with our top American pros. So I think that really inspired me to try and get over there and see what I was all about. And I think a sports psychology book that I was turned on to by you when I was 14, Playing Out of Your Mind by Dr. Alan Goldberg, really helped shape that as well, because I would write this down everywhere. I'd write my goals out and have it posted beside my bed when I woke up, and inside my locker at school, and inside my backpack and books. I want to play soccer in England. So I think for a pretty long time I had that goal, and always had those little reminders of what I wanted to achieve.
So I'm going to skip a little bit around here, and I kind of want to kind of stay on this timeline. So was there something that happened to you, you know, here in the United States while you were here, people that you met that you think, you know, severely influenced how that happened? Because, I mean, I know it wasn't, you know, I know it wasn't directly just me, because, you know, I remember certain people coming into our lives that seemed to come in just at the right moment. They gave both probably you and I a better vision of the world game, because, you know, I was just coaching in the second division here in the U.S. at the pro level, you know, not even in the MLS, and coaching at a you know, mid-level NCAA level, and I didn't have the knowledge of what it took to go in Europe. But I remember some people coming in to our lives. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how those affected you?
Yeah, for sure. I think the primary person that had a major hand, had, you know, the main hand in getting me to England, was Scott Juniper, the current head women's coach at UC Irvine. And Scott, I met probably when I was about 14 or 15. And I remember telling him, you know, these were my goals, but I never thought much of it. And he helped me along the way, just develop mental skill training programs and things like that, that really helped shape me mentally as a player to prepare me for that kind of step. And I know that he had played in England, and he's English, but he helped me get over there in the first place. But I think John Georgeff was the other person that really helped shape, you know, my views of what professional life might be like and what English football was like in particular. And John Georgeff was an Australian coach that was coaching in Marin. And I would train with him as much as possible and talk to him as much as possible, ask questions, things like that. But between those two people, I think they really helped shape where my career was headed. John Georgeff was a scout for Torino in Italy, among other clubs in Europe, and worked with the Federation in Australia. And he had a connection to FC Cologne. And I remember after he watched me maybe my senior year or something like that, and decided, yeah, I'm going to recommend you to FC Cologne for a trial. And I think I let Scott know that as well when I had seen him that year. And that's when he helped me get a place at Team Bath, at least for a trial period, to go and train with them prior to going to Cologne so that I'd be better prepared physically, mentally, and the rest. So yeah, those two people in particular, and there was loads of other people too that I know influenced and helped shape my views of what professional football was. And you know, a lot of those players that you worked with at the Seals, I remember being in the locker room and asking them questions, just trying to learn as much as possible about this unknown world to me. I think the Zimmer brothers as well were huge in influencing my desire to play in Europe, because they would bring over the top coaches in the world on a regular basis. And I got to see Franz Hoek destroying professional keepers with his striking ability and just doing whatever he wanted with the ball, and taking, you know, some of our top professional keepers and making them look like kids. So it was really, to me, at that point where I realized, yeah, it's going to be difficult, but that was the big hairy goal that I was after, was trying to get over there, and all of those people helped me along the way for sure.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things that I want people to understand is it's not enough to say that you want to do something, at least in my observances of you, and also Kamani Hill too, who, you know, had a big influence on me watching him develop, you know, and make it over there at Wolfsburg and play MLS, because I got to watch you two grow up. You two were the same age and got to play together for a while, and I watched how different you two approached the game from almost any other player who just said that they wanted to do it. What was your, you know, once you decided that you wanted to do this, Brad, what kind of things were you doing differently or in extra, right, that you saw, that you observed that other players weren't doing?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the main things was watching the game a lot. I know my other friends that played often weren't doing that. I think that's a huge thing, is studying the game. I remember studying goalkeepers, watching their techniques, analyzing their mistakes, analyzing the good things they did, just really paying attention as much as possible to what the top level keepers were doing. You know, when I first had the idea that I wanted to play professionally, I started juggling. I think that was the main thing for me. Technically, I started doing a lot of technical work and spending time with the ball against the wall, just against the kickback we had in our backyard. I remember throwing and kicking the ball against that to catch it over and over, and just doing repetitive things so that I'd be proficient at it under pressure. And I remember training a lot with Mike Benz, was a CSCS, Certified Sports Conditioning Specialist. And I trained in the same facility as several Olympic athletes for, I think, 4 or 5 years before I went abroad. I know that really made a big difference physically, because I was physically pretty scrawny and weak, you know, as a 14-year-old or so. And through doing high-speed treadmill work, plyometrics, weight training, the beginnings of powerlifting, I was really getting myself, you know, ready for that next thing. And when I was old enough to drive, I think as soon as I was 16, I was driving myself to the gym every morning and going at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. before school started, doing training when all my friends were sleeping in. That was one of my things, where I'd be up and working for a couple of hours before school started, going to school, and then 3 p.m. hit, the bell rung, and I'm out the door with my ball as fast as possible to go hit the wall or go to that next practice, whatever it was. So I think it was just a constant training attitude, where I had to prepare myself in every way. And I remember asking a lot of questions about you know, to you, to other coaches, you know, what's it like in Europe? What are the players like? Am I close? Am I comparable to them? And I remember you giving me a lot of videos. Here's the Ajax youth, you know, training. Here's what they look like. Here's what, you know, the youth at whatever club, you know, looks like in Europe. So I think it would be really important for students today, kids today that are wanting to play at a high level, to take into consideration. It's not just I do this one thing and I'm going to get it. I think you have to do multiple things and focus in a lot of areas to be good. And I think that's what I did, is tried to study, tried to physically train a lot, technically train a lot, mentally train a lot, and just prepare for the tough things that were ahead. Because certainly, you know, it looks nice on TV when you see the professional players doing their warm-ups and all that stuff. But the truth is, there's a lot of grueling work behind it that you don't see. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like that picture of the iceberg that we see, you know, that little meme where we only see the tip of it. We don't see all the work that went through. And, you know, it's a bummer because I tell your story a lot, but I'm always careful with it because it wasn't my story. I was just there observing and, you know, little bits and pieces of it. But frankly, I saw you treat it like a professional from the time you were probably 13, 14 on. You treated this like this was a long-term goal. And I try to express that to players that tell me that they want to play in college and they want to play professionally. And one of the first questions I often ask them is, do you watch college soccer? Have you ever seen a game? And the answer is oftentimes no, that they've never even seen what it looks like. And so I think with anything in life, it's hard to go achieve something if you never have any clue of what it really looks like at the end of the day. And I think having that little someone to model after, right, something to look at and something to have a goal to achieve is important. And that's what I observed with you. So fast forward a little bit. And you went through high school. What was your path looking like before you went to England? What did it look like was going to happen coming out of high school had you not gone to England?
Yeah, I mean, out of high school, I didn't have too many options college soccer-wise. I know the local junior college was after me, Chabot. He really wanted to come, me to come there, Tony Igwe. And I think that was the main one other than Sonoma State University. Again, because I had grown up going to Zimmer camps from the time I was probably 8 or 9 years old. You know, I had a connection with them and knew them. They're still, I think, some of the top coaches we have in the U.S. and for sure helped open my eyes to a whole new world of European football. So those were my really only two options. And if I went to Sonoma State, I would have been a redshirt goalkeeper under Matt Bernard, who was an All-American. Sonoma State had just come off of winning the national title in 2002. So that was a really fantastic option for me. And that's where I thought I was going to end up. But like you said, I was treating things differently, treating things like a professional. And I think that's where maybe Scott and Scott Juniper and John Georgeff, those people realized that or noticed it and helped me get a chance in Europe. So I was a senior in high school and John Georgeff had set me up with FC Cologne to have a trial there. And from there I had my European experience. So not a lot of options really, to be honest, which was probably for most players that aren't playing in the elite clubs, which I wasn't at the time, wasn't going to get a whole lot of looks from top D1 schools or even a lot of D2 schools.
So Scott comes to me one day and we're at, I think we're doing a camp together. And he said, just kind of pulled me aside. He said, so does Brad want to go over to Team Bath for a couple of weeks, right? That's how he presented it. It's like a little summer trip, a little summer vacation, a little thank you, you know, graduation present. Basically, what I said, yeah, I can swing that. We can do that. And that's how it started. And then you call me up. I don't know how many days it was in, but it wasn't very long before you were there. And you're telling me, you know, you're telling me about the fitness tests and you're telling me about that. So tell us the story. So you get over there. What happens when you get over there?
Yeah, so I initially went over just for a couple of weeks. I remember in preparation to be preparation for the FC Cologne trial. And I got over there, and the first thing we start doing is preseason. And I'm one of the youngest players there, if not the youngest player there. I remember that. All the other guys were 22, 23, 24, older for the most part. There's some other, maybe 19 or 20, but it was a lot of older players for the most part. And they had all been released from other clubs. When I got there, I was really amazed because I'm like, wow, this guy played with Alan Shearer. This guy played with, you know, XYZ. I could name 100 great players, right? So these players are getting released from clubs like Arsenal, Tottenham, Newcastle, Man United. You name it, there's a player there from some different clubs. And I remember doing the preseason fitness tests, and I was extremely fit. And a lot of that had to do with John Georgeff, who told me, if you're going to go to Cologne for this trial, you better go in fit. And he gave me lots of horror stories, basically, about what coaches in Europe might have done, or maybe not. Might not have done. I don't know if they were fables or truth, but he told me a lot of horror stories about what people had to do on trial, diving in car parks, doing endless laps or jumps over a bar and things like
that. Coach Williams, they are all true. Just so you know, they're all true.
All of them are true? There you go.
Go ahead, yeah. Danny. Go ahead. Yeah.
Really inspired me to get as fit as possible. So when I went to England, I more or less destroyed the fitness tests. I remember being one of the top guys on the beep test and doing the 12-minute run, getting something close to 10 laps. And they had never seen a goalkeeper do that before. All of the other keepers were at the back of the pack, and I think there might have been 5 or 6 of us. So because of that, I got a shot right away in the first team. They allowed me to play in a bunch of the preseason matches against some big clubs, Bristol City, Bristol Rovers, Preston North End. Got to play against, I think, might have been the last of AFC Wimbledon, Tottenham's youth team, their under 20 team at the time. So got to see a lot of different you know, high levels right away when I got there, a lot of different players right away when I got there. And after maybe a week or two, they offered for me to stay. And they said, we'd like you to stay here for 2 years and study here and play here and at the University of Bath. And I said, yes, as long as I don't make it in Germany, I'm still going to go to FC Cologne and try and make it there, because that's my goal, is I want to be a professional player. So I ended up staying there for, I think, maybe 3 or 4 weeks before the trial instead of the initial 2 weeks. And when I left, I remember them wishing me well, but I remember Paul and Andy and all of them, they had offered me a place to stay. So I was really happy about that. Obviously having a fantastic option to stay at Team Bath Football Club, which was one of the up and coming clubs through the non-league system in England at the time, had just finished coming off of an FA Cup run, which was historic because they reached the FA Cup first round for the first time in university history since maybe 1889. I think Oxford might have done it last or something like that. So it was an historic event, and definitely the club gained a lot of interest around England and around the world at the time. So it was a good place to be.
So you end up going to Cologne, right? So tell us about that experience.
Yeah.
You know, some players you got to meet, play with, because I remember some phone calls where it was like, man, I've never seen anything like this before, and I'd like you to just kind of share how difficult it is.
Yeah. So I got to Cologne, and I spent the first few days at Hennef with John Georgeff and training there, and there was a couple of smaller clubs, third division clubs and things like that, that we were watching, and also I was able to play a little bit in, start to learn my German on the field so that I was prepared for the trial even more so, communication and that kind of thing. And we first went to Bayer Leverkusen actually and got to visit there, John allowed me to play with his team, I think, in front of the youth coaches there at Leverkusen. I remember asking them for a trial and they declined, but it was a really good experience to be in that kind of environment, training on those kinds of pitches with those kinds of coaches around. And then when I got to Cologne, I arrived really early the day of the trial, maybe like 8 hours early, something like that, because I wanted to watch the first team train. And that's what I did that. I watched the first team keepers in particular, watched their whole session. The first team keeper coach also did the reserves. So I was trying to get an idea of what to maybe expect. And I remember just taking it all in that day until my trial in the afternoon. And I trialed with the U23s, which is the reserves there, and in the reserves there were some special players that I had no idea were special players at the time. It was only afterwards that I realized, oh, I was on the field with Lukas Podolski right there, and Andrew Sincala, Zambian international, and Josh Kennedy, an Australian international who played in the 2006 World Cup. And so there's several players there that I had no idea at the time were actually going to be big players, or you know, had already been a bit of a player, like Andrew Sincala had played for different clubs in Germany in the Bundesliga for a while, including, I think, Bayern Munich. And so anyway, it was a great experience to be on the field with them, getting pummeled, definitely, because, you know, I didn't experience anything like that in the States. The pace of the shot, the speed of the players, how quick they were after the first touch, the power of their headers, things like that, is all very different than what I was experiencing back home. And I remember that was one of the first things I noticed in England too, was like, wow, everybody can strike a ball here. Everyone can really zing it. And that was a big difference from training at home with my club teams, where I might be lucky to get two shots out of 10 target sometimes, you know. So it was definitely humbling to be in that kind of environment, and also very difficult, you know. I think that I showed well in my trial, and the coaches said that too afterwards. They said to me exactly, you have ability, but you're not German. If you were German, we might be able to keep you. You're not, so go back to England or go back home. That was their way of putting it. So maybe a little harsh, you know, at 18 for me to hear, but that was the reality, was you can be maybe just as good as some of the German players or foreign players, but if you're not head and shoulders better, you're not going to make it there. So I think that's a really important thing for players that want to even come over to America and think, oh, I'll just go to MLS. It's no problem. It, you know, it's not as good of a level as where I'm coming from in Europe or somewhere else. That's not always the case. And there's other factors that go into it too, financials and things like that, that you have to factor in. So, but overall, fantastic experience, and something that I'll forever take with me, you know, to be able to share with other players, and just something that helped shape me and mold me into who I am today.
So now you come back to England, right? And of course, we don't need to tell them little stories in between. There were some visa issues and stuff like that, but we get you settled back into England. And I want everybody to understand how difficult the professional game is. You don't have to name names of the coach that you and I will be thinking of. And maybe we'd have to get explicit of some of the things that they said to you, but they were hard on you at moments, weren't they, for being an American? I think because you were the only American probably that had ever gone through this program, right?
I think so at Team Bath. I don't know if there's any after I was there, but I was certainly the first one there. And it was all British players other than myself and a Serbian striker, one of my roommates. And that was it. So, you know, we're amongst, for me, it was a new culture because I wasn't used to people swearing at each other on the field. I wasn't used to, you know, just the aggression, the determination of everyone involved. It's very different than, you know, than America as a youth. I think we're a lot more politically correct on the field and things like that in the U.S. and all of that just went out the window. So it was difficult to adapt to that at first when someone's telling you to expletive off or whatever it is. You know, maybe they're not saying it in a personal way. It's just the environment that they've come out of, and that definitely took some adapting for me. You know, having a goalkeeper coach that played in the Premier League, played at a high level, but that's telling you, you know, F off, you Yankee this or that, you know, things like that. It's just different, you know, to hear that, to deal with that mentally, to try and persevere through that. And I think that I certainly did. By the end of being there, I felt at ease and at home, but for the first 6 months, even it was really difficult. But I also had some fantastic coaches and mentors there. Paul Tisdale was the manager at the time there, and Paul managed at Exeter City for I think 12 plus years. Was most recently at MK Dons, and Jed Roddy is high up in the FA now. He was also there's manager, director. I think Paul's title was probably head coach at the time. But yeah, Jed really called all the shots in terms of everything, the big picture stuff. And Andy Tilson was a fantastic mentor for me. He also played in the Premier League and had some great coaching too. But, you know, I think with everything, there's going to be ups and downs. And it's really just your mindset through those ups and downs, your attitude. During those times, it's going to create the outcome.
So we have a conversation, right, about, okay, so what's going to happen? You're going to try to stick it out there for another 2 years? Because I think you had finished your program at University of Bath, which is basically almost what a bachelor's degree is that you've gone through. And you end up coming back to the United States. So was your reception different from college coaches, knowing you had been playing in England and a little trial in Germany? Did they look at you differently?
Yeah, for sure, without a doubt. I think that having trained in that kind of environment on a day-to-day basis with Team Bath FC at the time, being it was the only full-time non-league club, so no other non-league club trained every day like Team Bath did. I remember training two times a day. Usually I would train with the first team and the reserves. Or sometimes three, you know, if that's what it was that day. So it was a very intensive program. And yeah, that was the option, was either try and stay there and stick it out, complete a bachelor's degree there, or to come back and play college soccer. And that was certainly, I think, the easier option for me, being an American, visa-wise and all the rest, to try and come back and play in the U.S. And I remember writing several schools in the top 25 of NCAA Division I and getting replies from most of them because of that, where before I couldn't get a reply from, you know, schools that were 20 minutes away from me or 30 minutes away from me. So I think that that was definitely a game changer in terms of opening up my options. I think also being 20 years old as a freshman in college makes a big difference. You know, when you're 18 to 20 is a big maturity rate, especially when you learn a lot of the lessons that I had to learn, how to manage my finances on my own, how to balance my time, manage my time on my own, training, you know, manage your own training more or less, you know, if I was doing too much or not enough, whatever it was. So just making sure that I always had everything balanced. It made me more ready to be a leader right away, I felt like, when I was returning and ready to come back. So, yeah, definitely my options opened up, and I had some bigger schools. And I also had a very tiny St. Francis University contact me, and that was through Notre Dame because BJ Craig, my college coach at the time, he had previously worked with Bobby Clark, who was at Notre Dame. So, yeah, it was definitely a beneficial experience to be over there, to take that time to mature, to develop physically, technically, mentally. When I came back, I was much stronger for it.
Yeah, I remember that conversation with Bobby Clark, and it was like, well, yeah, I know he can probably play for us. In fact, he might start for us, except I have no money for a goalkeeper, and it's going to be $52,000. And it's like, guess what, Brad? You're not going to Notre Dame. I don't have that kind of money. But Bobby being who Bobby is, and anybody who's ever met Bobby, he's such a kind man that, you know, he would have called 20 coaches for you. Just because that's who he is, even if he doesn't know you. And he was nice enough to get a hold of BJ. I think you find sight unseen, right? Just because Bobby knew who Tilly was, who Tisdale was, and yeah, knew who Jed was. He knew about the program. And it was basically just Bobby saying, this is a good level. And if his coaches say that he's good, then he's good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, exactly. It was off of Bobby's recommendation only, and it was, I think he might have talked to, and BJ might have talked to some of my coaches in England, but it was sight unseen. And I remember when I signed for St. Francis, one of the assistant coaches from Oregon State actually came to watch me play, and the day before he was supposed to arrive, I think I had just signed for St. Francis, so... you know, it's not a common practice at all for coaches to see a player and sign a player unseen. I think that was extremely rare that it happened, but overall, I think it worked out.
Yeah, it did. It did. And so you end up at St. Francis, and I know it was a little bit of a rough start, right, your freshman year, because you were carrying a pretty nasty injury you had picked up, right? And yeah. But kind of... Next, just for a couple minutes here, kind of walk us through that career, how it went for you, and how maybe you think that your time in Europe prepared you for the college game.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was really unfortunate. I had an injury about a week before the preseason was meant to start, and only 5 years later found I had a broken bone in my heel, it had been floating around in there the whole time. But after that freshman year had passed, I was able to physically get myself right, and I was able to come in and perform to the level that I knew how. And I think a big part of being able to persevere through that mentally came from my experiences in England, because when you're trying to play, when you're injured, when you're not 100%, things like that, it's just it can be really frustrating not being able to do what you want to do or know you can do. And I think a lot of the struggles that I had whilst in England, homesickness and just dealing with new environment, culture change, things like that, I think it really helped prepare me to come in and also be a leader And I think that's what I was able to do once I established myself as the number one keeper at St. Francis. Then I could really help lead the team from the inside. And because I had already experienced guys that partied hard and, kind of did the typical English thing where, you go to the game, then you go to the pub right after. I knew I wanted something different because I saw those players, their levels went down, their performance levels went down eventually. Maybe not all of them right away, but I think over time it's inevitable. So knowing that, having that knowledge and experience, I was able to help implement a dry season at St. Francis my sophomore year there. And as a result, we had the best season in school history. Went to our tournament final for the first time in school history, semifinal, then final, and then did it again the next year, my junior year as well. So we did the same exact thing. Went with the dry season, it paid off, everybody bought in, and we just created our own environment. And I think a lot of that just came from my experiences in England. With having coaches tell you, yeah, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, that's one thing. Having experienced it yourself, I think it makes it really powerful. So just getting those lessons really helped me to be a leader in college soccer at an earlier point maybe than I would have been otherwise. And just the physical growth and maturity, I think, really came to. I think I started to hit my peak in strength and weight when I was probably 20, 21, 22 years old. Definitely not at 18, 19. I was still a work in progress very much at that point. So I think having that time certainly helped because there's a lot of physicality in the American game. That's just the reality. The NCAA Division I soccer is going to be physical more focused on those attributes sometimes than the technical side of things. I think it's changing, but always we have that as our American identity, I think, having it be a little more physical oriented.
So in summary, Brad, what would your advice be to a player who is considering a gap year, right? So the NCAA, by the way, I'm not sure we properly explained this, gives you a year out coming out of high school, basically, to do whatever you want to do. Some kids want to travel, some kids want to whatever, go play overseas or whatever they want to do. And then it doesn't affect your other 4 years of eligibility. And so what advice would you give, having experienced this yourself, to kids that are considering a gap year?
I think for the right person, it can be extremely beneficial. I don't think it's for everybody, but I think that, like I said, the physical gains I was able to make between 18, 19, and 20 were huge. I think that I was able to manage my own responsibilities better. Having taken that time out, my finances, I was able to manage better, just time management in general. I think those are huge skills that sometimes student athletes that I work with are lacking. And if you can develop those skills over a year or a year and a half period or so, it can be really helpful when you do get to college and have to balance your coursework along with maybe a regional or national schedule as a player, because that's undoubtedly difficult for anyone to be able to manage, 16 or 15 credits, something like that, and traveling 2 days a week to or 3 days a week of just travel time going to games. So I think also just the culture in general in England, it's a football mad culture. I think having experienced that, it helped me infect some of my teammates in a positive way, and give them sort of this football-crazed culture that I experienced. I think I could really relate to our international players that we had a lot better because of that, because I understood them better. And I just think learning from other people is a fantastic way to learn and grow as a person. Learning a new culture is really beneficial. Even if it's just another English-speaking culture, it can be helpful when you have those experiences in your future life. So, and I think the coaching I received too was phenomenal. You know, really, I had top-level coaches that were sort of in the beginning of their professional careers at Team Bath. And I think that having that coaching really put me ahead of a lot of other players in America. I felt really confident when I came back to the U.S. to play college ball, because I knew exactly what it was like at a pro level and how to kind of, again, bring that to the college level. How can I stay after training for, you know, 45 minutes and do goal kicks and just work on different things? And I would keep other guys out and, hey, come hit crosses at me and or come shoot on me, and just doing the things that I learned at Team Bath. That's what everyone there did. Training would end after a couple hours, and then for another hour and a half, you'd have guys on the field training. So those experiences definitely, if you don't have the, you know, Division I opportunities out of high school, like I did too, that's another reason why I think people might benefit from it. I definitely had only a couple of options, really, if I wasn't going to go and walk on to programs. So if you go and walk on, it's a major risk, because you might or you might not make it, or maybe you just might make the team, but you don't ever play. So I think it's a lot better when you have a coach that wants you there, that has invested time into you and things like that. And that's what I ended up getting with BJ Craig and Michael Casper at St. Francis. It was a really good experience to go away first and then come back.